You are listening to the Massive Report Podcast.
Welcome to the Massive Report Podcast, where something good happens, and then something bad happens, and then something good happens, and then something bad happens, and then something good happens, and then something bad happens.
It tends to happen when we don't have podcasts. So we missed last week, and the team wins two games.
Yeah. Saucy Brewworks is where we're hunkered down, our fine sponsor and host. And I see that Brett is already enjoying a libation. It does have an interesting bouquet to it.
Yeah, this is a white stout called Phobia. That's F-A-U-X-B-I-A, Phobia. And it's maybe the most complex, like crazy beer I've ever tasted. It's wild.
Ice cream, sort of.
Yeah, I don't. I can't quite wrap my head around it.
I think you can't go wrong there at Saucy Brewworks, and I see that Sam is hiding his chips from us. I don't even see him. I just see him going into his face. That's all I see.
There's wings coming too.
Oh, okay. Sam behind the controls and the fine art photographer of the Mass Report. Good work as always with the two home games. Murph is here. Bart will be here soon. My name is Brian.
He just walked in. He's getting a beer.
All right. I see where his priorities lie. Where he started, and he's at the bar. I get it. Like and subscribe if you will, and let's jump right in. We have a lot to get to. I just want to plant a seed here, Brett. We were talking before we started. When we preview the Chicago game, I want to talk a bit about designated players.
Okay.
I think sometimes we get into these the weeds with MLS with their arcane terminology and how players are identified and designated and so forth. Because to me, Chicago and Columbus present the stark contrast between when you get DPs right and when you get them wrong. So I'm just kind of putting that out there
okay.
So you can let it
We're
roll
ready.
Around and marinate in your head. But first, we have to go way back, months ago, seemingly, when we took that trip to Nashville. It started so wonderfully and then just kind of fell apart. I think, our season in a microcosm there.
Yeah, I mean, you get a great goal from Yao Yeboah, 90 seconds in or something along those lines? And look, so far this year, this team's been pretty good with the lead for the most part. The issue against Nashville was Nashville's a really good team, A. And B, this team's still trying to figure out, and we've touched on this, so I don't want to rehash it too much, but what to do when leading and you need to just kind of kill off a game. They've had some good moments. I think we go back to that LA Galaxy game where they were up 2-0 at halftime. That one was maybe too much of kind of time wasting and maybe not going for a third goal. So they're still, you got a young team playing a new system and everything. So I think that's not surprising, but yeah, the way they allowed Nashville to kind of get back into that game and then really just take it over. The two corner kick goals, which I was a little surprised how, it's bad to give up two corner kick goals in any game, but it seemed like everyone all of a sudden thought the Crew had a set piece problem. And they'd given up four total set piece goals all year. So, I think they just marked poorly, really, on two of those. And Philip Quinton has to take a lot of that responsibility being the 6'6" guy back there, whatever he's, I don't think he's quite that tall, but the biggest guy on the field out there. And I think Patrick Schulte, too, probably can come out off his line. But again, these are these young guys that are having to play a lot of minutes, and you're going to have some mistakes. The moment of the match, though, was Mukhtar's just saucing Aiden Morris, who had done a really good job on him the rest of the game. But that's just okay, kid. I'm gonna take you to the clean. You've annoyed me all game, and then he just roofs the shot. So disappointing for sure. I think anytime you're up 1-0 at halftime on the road, you at least hope to get a point out of it. And I thought they played well enough, at least in parts, to do so. But Nashville's pretty good.
I think in my mind it's the kind of I would say maybe our thesis statement of. Or summary of the last maybe 6 or 7 podcasts that we've done, where it looks really good against bad teams and against good teams maybe less so. And I tweeted this after the Charlotte game that I think we're officially into kind of let's see it against a good team now territory with the Columbus Crew. The set piece goals for me in the Nashville game were frustrating because they weren't good balls. And in my mind, they weren't really all that dynamic of like even kind of, from a kind of drawing it up and execution standpoint on Nashville. They're just that those weren't really even they were just poorly timed, poorly defended. And I think that's to me a mega issue because the margins are already so small on defense with this team that you when you. And you struggle and you're undermanned that like when you give up two goals in a situation that is entirely directly in your control, that's frustrating. But at the same time, I thought they looked pretty good in attack, and I felt like it was in that game, and then we saw it kind of build a little bit maybe and then peaking with the Charlotte game from this past weekend where it looks like in my mind something is kind of clicked in the final third with this team and I'm way in on it. And so the defensive struggles are what they are and obviously we saw them in the other two games that we'll talk about here as well. And those are frustrating, but like going forward, I think this is a basically elite MLS team, and that's an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah, I don't think it's a surprise that the offense has clicked quicker than the defense, because it's a lot of, I don't want to say the same principles, but it's more similar what they want to do on the attacking side of the field that they've done the past handful of years than it is to. Plus, you have really good players up there. I mean, as you were saying, Brian, with the designated players, you know, two of your three are the furthest attacking guys, and now you've started to find some chemistry with a guy like Yao and some of those guys. And I think Yao has played, you know, I was kind of as big of a critic as anyone on him early in the year. I think he's played as well as anybody these last few games. That goal against Nashville is, you know, I guess sometimes you get lucky and just hit that and it goes perfectly, but... You know, to have the confidence to take that, especially, I think what was big for him.
And it starts with Cucho too, yeah. Which is a huge thing because it's everything that I think Cucho brings to the table in terms of raising the collective level of everyone around him. That because that guy is giving everything that he's got, Yao I think feels maybe that he's has to raise his level so that. You know, he's actually even trying that shot. Yao Yeboah of 2022 is looking to give that thing up as fast as humanly possible, playing not to screw up as opposed to trying to do something dynamic and wild. So, I totally agree that I think it just feels really, really, really good right now.
And it's a good thing. We're going to get another shot at Nashville here in the not-too-distant future, and I think that's... Good to not have to wait 3 months to play them again because I think they're one of those measuring stick clubs. It seems like this league is mostly bad teams based on our schedule. And we certainly played a couple of them. We have another one coming up on Saturday night. Colorado last Wednesday, I've started calling the goals we give up, like the bad giveaways, Nancy goals. Because he insists... that we play that way. And it's obvious that he's drilled that into these guys and they will play this way. And mistakes be damned, but the mistakes piled up so much for Mr. Quinton that he's taken a seat on the bench and I don't know when we're going to see him again.
It's a big question mark, right? I think, first, Quinton was thrown, this is not a good situation for him to be in. He wasn't planned, you know, planning to be a starter. That he's supposed to be your second or, you know, first or second choice off the bench, really, and coming into the season. Josh Williams has been out the entire time. You're going to sign a free agent center back. That didn't come together. And Milos Jegnik out missing a lot of time. So I think You know, he was kind of thrust into a difficult position to play, and then playing that kind of true center back, the center of that back three, that's even more. It puts you under a microscope, and anything with defense, you know, it's the mistakes are huge, and they cost you goals more often than not than mistakes, you know, from young players at the other end of the pitch. So that's going to happen. I think it's interesting to see him, you know, out in a player like Sean Zawadzki, you know, ostensibly getting the switch in, although you're putting in, you know, Morera, sliding him into that center center back slot. But you can't argue with the results, although you did see, you know, some of the same turnovers and goals that, you know, resulted later in the weekend. But I thought it was, you know, he's also played so much for a player that in such a short amount of time. I don't know if it was as much, you know, a indictment of his play as we need to give you a break for a guy who's playing, you know, every minute. And this was 3 straight weeks, basically, of Saturday-Wednesday games. Yeah,
Sunday-Wednesday in the most recent case.
Well, a strike against him would be that Zawadzki not only comes on at halftime of the Colorado game, but then scores a goal on a corner kick, which is something that has been lacking for years with this club.
I think when you look at this situation, I think back to Chad Marshall's rookie year, where they played a back three, and they had Robin Fraser next to him, who won Defender of the Year that season. And Chad was Rookie of the Year. And I remember Chad talking about throughout his career. I remember even when he, I think when he retired, or maybe his last year in Seattle, looking back, you know, as they kind of wrapped up his career, talking about how, you know, he doesn't know if his career, even though he's the number 2 pick and everything, like what his career, behind Freddie Adu, by the way.
Right.
How his career goes if he doesn't have a guy like Robin Fraser for his rookie year that just kind of taught him those things. And I think that was the plan here. Was, okay, maybe you don't play Philip Quinton every game. That's why you kind of brought in a left-side center back in Viasia. But that he can learn alongside these guys. And I think we've seen positive moments where you can tell, like, okay, there's a reason they liked this kid in preseason, right? But, I think the fatigue is certainly something. And Nancy talked about that, it being a pre-planned sub, maybe not at halftime, but they knew they needed to find him some rest somehow. And they talked to Sean about obviously playing a position that he's not, I don't think, you know, maybe he did as a child or at some point, but, like, you know, he didn't come up through the academy playing center back. But I do think it's interesting. And if we're going to criticize for some things that they've done defensively, like, it's very much a possession-oriented back three when you have Zawadzki, Morera, and Amundsen, guys who should be better with the ball, though there was still the issue. But I don't know how well that works when, going back to what we're saying, playing a good team, especially a team with some height. But it's an interesting plan B, which we haven't seen a ton of plan Bs thus far this year.
They just don't have plan B on it. Again, it's,
I mean,
all
really, Brett, this has been completely forced on Wilfred Nancy at this point.
Yeah.
This is it. Vicia is injured. Milos is injured. What else is he going to do?
Well, and I think at this rate, it's you have to try and score 3 or 4 goals a game, because you're probably guaranteed to give up at least one. I think in the Colorado game, it was interesting because they got caught in behind probably the most all year.
It looked very tactical that they were going to play over the top and attack Phil Quinn.
And I think they better teams probably score 3 or 4 goals in that game rather than the 2. And the second one is a thunderbolt out of nowhere.
They did score the second.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Offside too.
That offside goal.
Yeah. So that one's a tough one for me because it looked like there was a very clear plan from the Rapids and Robin Fraser, and there's no answer to it. Like, the crew can't. They're not going to drop the line any further. That ship has sailed, right? So it's a little bit hope for the best. And in that game, it worked out. And so it's tough. I think with Phil, it's that I see him as the center of the three because the other two positions require more running. And the running is the issue. Like, the physicality, the running is the issue. I think his technical ability is there. I think his decision-making, for the most part, on top of that technical ability, is probably just fine. It's the running. It's the running. And it's the... and then it's the decisions made because the running, you know you can't do the running that he's made that has got him into some trouble. So I think that any experiments of him on the right or left side, they probably need to be done. And I think the center is probably where he's best suited to be. With Sean fits... to me, I think the technical ability there, the passing, the vision, is
he's a lot like Marrera.
Yeah,
I mean they started different ways, but they do a lot of the same things.
And I think Zawadzki, in the same way that I felt like Will Sands was like this as well, underrated athletically,
mm-hmm.
And so I think he gives them a dimension that. If he's going to be on that right side, that I really like, especially stroking balls, line balls into whoever's bombing on the right side now, whoever that might be. So I dig it. It is what it is, right? Like there are no other options, and you're going to have to score 2-3 goals to win, I think.
Yeah, and I think we should point out, and I don't know how many people picked up on this last week, but. Nancy said the plan originally was to play Sean in the middle and keep Marrera on the right. And Steven came to them at halftime of that game knowing they were going to make the switch and said, what do you think about me in the middle? Because I've done this before. Which, this is a guy who was very uncomfortable with this position switch when he started. And a guy that they have kind of forced into a leadership role. And if you go back, you could really notice it at the stadium. But Steven was talking to Sean a lot. And credit to him for helping him figure out defensively, less so on Saturday than against Colorado. But this is, I think in Marrera, this is a guy that they found that we knew he could do a lot of good things playing as the wingback, but his willingness to try these different things and stepping up as a leader with this team, I think has been impressive because I don't think that's something he's a quiet guy. I think he's very talented, and that's why he's able to do some of this stuff. But
and the other thing too is the English, which he had basically none of when he arrived. That he made that a priority to be able to communicate better, specifically in that. And I think that's really brought him, into what I would think is like the next level of a guy that I had pretty high expectations for when he came in. He's doing things that I didn't think he maybe had kind of in his skill set. So that's, all fair play and credit to him because he's exceeding already pretty high expectations. And he's doing it at a position that I never pictured him playing. Yeah.
And I think, too, with Sean, this is a guy they clearly like and want to get on the field. And you've developed a handful of these central midfielders here. They can't all play. You also have Darlington Nagbe. So, finding a role for somebody like that who you just know is a good player, I think is a positive. Now, hopefully this isn't a long-term solution and Sean can go back to being kind of the next guy off the bench. But I do think these are valuable minutes in his career. And, now in a pinch, regardless, throughout his career, however long he's with the crew, that he can step back there and do a job.
And, Bart, I think Admonson has been, obviously with the goals that we've seen from him, but more importantly, he's another guy that we've acquired from a struggling New York City team that has given us value and variety in what he can do as well.
Yeah, and I think he's, it's also a little bit of evidence there in that goal on Saturday that, look, it's not just young players that kind of struggle with some of the things Wilfred Nancy is asking them to do. And playing it back there that leads to that late Justin Miram goal, I think. But I mean, again, this is another guy who you brought in as a left back, told to play, a left wing back where you're covering much more of the field than you were. And then probably he's played more minutes at that center back position than he has at left 100%. Wing back. And again, I think, on the body of it, playing very well. And you have to be with the majority of acquisitions, I think it's the acquisitions that weren't made that that irritate me and crew fans more than, you know, the ones that, that this team has made over the, you know, the course of the season and in the preseason. I mean, another one of those, Christian Ramirez, you know, is in the MLS Team of the Week, and has been the best backup striker that, you know, crew have had in, you know, half a decade or so. I mean, how many years on this podcast were we talking about how we just needed a backup striker? I mean, I think Ola Kamara was the last one who, you know, came anywhere near him in that 2015-2016 season. And he's just been, you know, absolutely phenomenal money. So it's...
And not much money.
Yeah, no, not
much. I don't know what the transfer fee stuff is, but... He's not making a ton. I mean, you know, for a backup striker, he's doing fine. But, yeah, I think we were talking during the game on Saturday trying to think of, like, the backup strikers they've had over the years. Like, Ola and Jeff Cunningham are the two that come to mind.
Cunningham
like,
would be the backup to McBride in OG days.
Yeah. Christian Steindorsen scored a – yeah, Dante.
Dante.
But, yeah, I mean, they just –
That, you know, half a season of Miguel Berry.
Who scored a banger the other night.
Yes,
last
that
Wednesday.
Was sweet. I think he's the best guy in that role that we've seen. Because I think calling Ola a backup is probably not totally fair.
By the letter of the law, he was there for a bit.
But the Jason Gary was the name that popped into my head when we were talking about it.
We have the same birthday.
In terms of a guy that added an element in a level, not just a level of play, but a way of playing that no one else on the team can do. Yeah. He gives them something that I think works really, really well in very specific matchups, and that's why you're seeing him score when he does play. You're seeing him score, multiple goals or have like really, really good, multiple really good chances in games because he puts himself in those really good positions.
Has to have some of the best efficiencies and goals per minute in MLS this season.
Well, just below Sean, who is, I think, in the top five in the league.
That's fair,
But it is part of a larger conversation that I think that I saw some stuff after the Cincinnati game and talking about kind of Bez. And Issa Tall and Corey Ray kind of being on the hot seat in terms of acquisitions or whatever. And I, like, really bristled and scoffed at that, like, as an initial reaction because we're talking about an act of God that keeps two center backs from coming into the team. In the meantime, they pick up Gustavo Valencia, who you're asking to just play and be okay, and he has 100% been that. You, in a pinch out of nowhere, you have to go and get a left back. You get Malte comes in and he scores twice in a fortnight. Outrageous. Okay. And they've developed midfield players, and the midfield depth is fantastic. And then Christian Ramirez has been doing what he's been doing. So it's that talk and discussion I thought was kind of crazy to me. Now, I do think there's frustration in terms of the center back stuff, and I get all of that. And I think if it did involve the charismatic kind of face of this club and Jonathan Mensah, we probably in terms of his being shipped out of town, I don't think we kind of view the entire kind of macro progress in the same way. But the moves I think have been fantastic and have worked out, and they have had to happen no matter what. And for the most part, I don't think they've really given up a whole lot.
When the Ramirez one was interesting, because obviously he's been in this league before, and so you kind of knew what you were getting, but I think what Nancy, I know because he said it, actually, what Nancy likes about him the most is the dirty work he's willing to do. And obviously, you know, scoring two goals against Charlotte is in addition to that, but he said, not that Jason can't do some of this stuff, but, like, Christian's been doing... That's kind of how he's made his career. He's never been a prolific goal scorer, but he does the stuff that the prolific goal scorer usually doesn't want to do. And, you know, sometimes you'll get games like against Charlotte where he gets himself in the right places, a lot of it because of the other guys around him and the space that they create. But he's also he's smart. He just understands what you need to do to win some games, and I think that's valuable experience.
I think we've seen the last two games, too, that Cucho is another man, despite his salary and his car, is willing to do the dirty work as well. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we're a little baffled by where he chooses to put himself on the field. But there seems to be a means to an end in terms of what he's able to do, in terms of winning balls, putting his body on the line to either score or, you know, as we saw on Saturday, you know, collide to win a ball that leads to a goal. So that's a beautiful thing to have. We hope he stays upright and healthy. Can't talk about the Colorado game without talking about Lucas. I mean,
yeah. Well, real quick with Kucha, I mean, he has 7 assists this year.
Yeah.
I think if you'd told even him before the season that that was going to be kind of what he's done a little over a third through the season, he would have been surprised. And obviously, he's only played 10 games because of the injury, but his, we didn't see this really a ton. You know, him and Lucas had really good chemistry. He was on the end of some Diaz crosses, but he wasn't a facilitator as much a year ago. And obviously, he played this winger position. Not that he's playing a winger now, but he played in a role where he wasn't the clear goal scorer in prior clubs. But I think it's interesting because this is not how you would have drawn up where how the attack was going to work, I don't think. Maybe this is how Nancy did, but I don't think any of us would.
I think the free-flowing nature of it suits him. I mean, I still think he should be in the box because his ability in tight spaces, I don't see anybody better than that.
You look at that third goal in Charlotte. Colorado.
Yeah, that's what, like, it's just like a, it's kind of a nothing ball from Lucas, but he makes something of it by being that dynamic and basically 1-2 touch. I think Kucha is a guy that it's just on or off. There's no middle ground. And I think in terms of a striker, that's actually kind of rare. I think in terms of like, the highest paid player and being a bit mercurial and maybe a bit, sometimes you wonder about effort. Like, I don't think you ever have to think about him or question that or whatever. No. He's going to give you everything he's got. And I felt this way when he went under the Caleb Porter last year, that his buy-in is absolute. And I don't think it necessarily would have to be being the high profile player that he is. So I think that just speaks to his character and the level of his character, but and also his ability as a player. He's just a special guy, and I think we're probably somewhat lucky that he's even here. Honestly,
yeah,
you know what I mean. And so it's, I think it, like, I know we've had this conversation in some parts, in some ways, but like, if you'd have told me in 2009 that a guy of his level was not just going to be in MLS but be playing for the Columbus Crew, I kind of would have like rolled my eyes at you.
You're going to get a Premier League striker. Yeah. Okay, yeah. And he's under, 23.
He's sub 30.
Yeah.
Like, I would have never believed that. So it's just fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic.
I think it's also, because we talk about these guys a lot, I think going back to like Aiden and some of the, there have been some unsung, not, I mean, Aiden's certainly been appreciated for what he's done, but like, we talked about him when he was scoring goals. He hasn't been scoring goals recently. Still doing a lot out there. You know, these guys had, you know, the wing backs that they've played, Mo, Max Arfson having to come in at a last second notice because Mo gets hurt, comes in and scores a goal and plays a pretty solid game. I think we just, you know, we obviously talk about the stars of this team a lot, but I think they've done a good job of finding these guys who fit certain roles, and some of them have been forced into these roles, and we're seeing how it works. But I like that they have options, because I feel like there have been crew teams in the past where, like, you know, if one guy doesn't have a good game, if Higuain or Scalotto didn't have great games, a lot of the times it was
exactly.
And now you've got other options that can do some different things, be it goal scoring, defending, winning balls in the midfield, whatever it may be. They've started to find some of that.
So am I wrong to assume that in every match, Aiden has to sort of come in with a mindset like, okay, what's Darlington, how is he going to play? And that dictates how I'm going to play, how Darlington is being used. I don't know if they talk about this before the game, But it seems like there's been sort of a fluid situation between the two of them, and Morris is sort of doing whatever Nagby's not going to do for that particular match.
I don't think I would have really ever thought of it quite that way.
It could had be you not phrased I'm it wrong.
That no, I don't think you are. Everything is going to be with how they both play, respective to each other, is going to be planned ahead of time. That's not. I don't think it's going to be like a game time thing. Like, oh, D's doing this, so I have to react to that. But there is something to, I think, Aiden kind of understanding the running and the tackling and how much of that he needs to do, relative or respective to the contributing in attack and in the contributing in the buildup. I felt like a good example would be of a game where he kind of had to do a little bit more in like the counter pressing, especially off of turnovers, would be like kind of in the early second half of the Nashville game, where they didn't really want the ball in large part as a kind of philosophically as a club. But they started to get a little bit more of it, and then you saw Aiden kind of get sucked out of that midfield block, of that middle block, to basically try and get a hold of it. I think he's the second balls for Aiden this year have been like an outrageous. His retention and his win rate of duels off of second balls has been fantastic, and then. That's always been pretty good. But the thing that I think for me as a midfielder that I've always wanted to see him kind of make that next iteration or next step is the pass that comes off of that. What do you do when you retain the ball? Are you able to distribute it in a dynamic way? Are you just, or if like what Artur would sometimes do, win the ball would go backwards every single time because that's what he felt comfortable doing.
Right.
Aiden sometimes is hoovering that up. And then, boom, it's right back into the buildup, and it's right back into the flow of things. And they don't necessarily lose a step, or they don't necessarily kind of have to feel like they build up the steam or the momentum, or have to reestablish the steam or momentum. So that's just been crazy good to me, and I think it's exactly what this team needs because Darlington's job, I think, on a base level is just to be the guy that kind of connects the back line to everyone else. He's not going to be doing the running. I don't think he really wants to do the running. I really don't think he wants to get into the final third all that much because I think homeboy's tired of getting kicked for 15 years, 10 years, or however long he's been in the league. And I respect that. And so Aiden, I think, has been asked to do a little bit more, especially in the physicality stuff, not too much more because, Nancy has talked about him running too much.
Right. But which hasn't seemed to change, by the way.
But there is something to the second balls and the duels, and then the first pass off of that interaction has been so good this year. And that's a big reason why I think the crew look as good as they do, both in the middle block and the build-up, but also in the final third as well.
I think a good example of what you're saying, Brian, is the first half against Colorado. Mo was almost like a right wing forward with Ramirez in the middle, Cucho on the left, and Lucas behind. And Darlington was pulling out and playing almost as like a fullback, like filling in that space that Mo was leaving. And so Aiden had the midfield to himself, and that was a lot of work for him. On the second half, they changed things, and Darlington was back in there. But I do think they are asking him, when they asked Darlington to do some different things, and we have seen some games where Darlington has been a bit more offensively, I won't say minded, but tactically that was clearly something they asked him to do for that game. Aiden has had to handle it. I think there was some vice versa of that early on too, when Aiden was scoring, and not that he can't get into the box now this way, but there was clearly an effort to get him a little bit more forward, and I think you saw Darlington sit, and I'd have to go back and really look at it, but just kind of sitting there a little bit more. Aiden still did a lot of the tackling, but Darlington was a deeper guy, and that may be tactical, that may be okay, we've found a role that works better here. Yeah. I don't know, but I do agree with you for sure.
I think we're kind of drifting around here anyway. So
we got to talk about Cincinnati. We just got to talk about the game. We just got to get into it. We got to get into it.
To the Cincinnati game.
Brett
wants to go all the way back.
I thought we already talked about
we
that.
We did. I think about the the way the Aiden Morris stuff kind of triggered me a little bit in terms of the how I feel about it, like how what it's supposed to look like was against a good team is that, and I keep waiting for it to like be more consistent. Be more consistent and be more dynamic. And we saw flashes of it against Colorado, saw flashes of it against Nashville. And then, like, it's just, it's wild to me how that game has continued to influence the ones preceding it in that, like, that's the level. That's the level that I want to see this team play at every single game in, game out, night in, night out. And they touch it, they touch on it, it looks okay, it looks good, and then, like, you get the first half that we saw against Colorado. You get the second half against Nashville. And I'm not sure if it's... I just can't quite put my finger on as to... Is it an individual kind of positioning and then tactical kind of assignments for those guys? Or why can't it seem like that cohesiveness in the 10 field players that we saw when it was really good in the comeback? Mm-hmm. Why is that like the missing piece that this team can't seem to consistently touch on and then build off of night in and night out?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it has to do with still the relative newness and then how many guys you've had to play.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you're still trying to learn. And, you know, we've talked about it a lot. Nancy's kind of forcing the system on guys. I think there's been some give and take there a little bit, but I agree with you entirely. I mean, when it's good, it's really good. And you saw that kind of in these games recently, like even in the same game, as you mentioned, like
right.
First half, second half. And it's, I think it's always fun to watch. I know Tom Bogert who's now at The Athletic, got some shtick on Twitter because he tweeted out a video of one of the goals this past week. And
it was
said,
the scoop. It was the Lucas goal from Colorado.
The Crew may be the most fun team in the league to watch, and a bunch of Cincinnati people were like, what about us? We're top of the league. And he was like, I didn't say they were the best team. I said they're the most fun team. And I think like when LAFC is doing LAFC things and not playing CONCACAF Champions League, I think they're probably up there too. But you're seeing what they want to do. And I don't know if it will get to what you're saying this year, but like Montreal had it figured out a lot last year. And another thing I think is I'll be interested to see now going forward, they haven't had a lot of practice time recently because of the way the schedule's been. And I think with the guys coming out and guys having to step in and things like that, you haven't been able to practice a lot of these things. So you're just kind of doing it on game day. You know, you're doing a lot of film work, a lot of kind of walkthrough stuff. And I wonder how much, okay, now you have a week to practice for Chicago, and then the schedule looks a bit normal going forward. Eventually you're going to have a lot of time off, sort of, with the League's Cup stuff. Maybe that second half of the season is when, like, oh, now it's, like you said, now it's starting to happen consistently as they, you know, really get time to put it together.
I still look at that third goal, the Cucho goal against Colorado, and that's, I think that is the ideal, what you're looking for if you're Wilfried Nancy. I mean, what, 23 total passes that in the build-up? Every single player on the field touching it. And then, you know, finally putting it, off the turnover, and then putting it in a good dangerous position that only Cucho Hernandez could have done anything and made anything out of, and he picks it out. And that was also, you know, a game that you saw this team come back, and we haven't seen this team come back too many times. Certainly, pull off the successful comeback, and you know, again, I would like to see him stop giving up garbage time goals. Although, you know, that one against Colorado, I mean, that's absolutely. The other thing that's like, you know, I don't mind, one, if you've given up a garbage time goal, and two, if it's an absolute banger garbage time goal. It's the, you know, turnovers in our own end, playing it back to Schulte that drive me nuts, but. But again, that's one of those things where it's like, okay, if they're able to solve that, and I don't think that is a given, but the hope certainly is that that's the case, that, you know, through repetition and comfort and just players developing and you know, building chemistry too, that you'll be able to at least cut those down by a large chunk, that suddenly, well, then you don't see a whole lot of big holes in this team. Or teams are going to have to find other ways to game it out, and not just count on this team shooting themselves in the foot or handing one over to you. And that is, you know, to your point, maybe you've talked me into it, or I'm talking myself into, you know, your camp there, Brett, with the Cincinnati game. It's just, then suddenly, you know, this team's, it's hard to see teams, you know, defeating them if they're not defeating themselves.
I thought to myself while I was watching the Colorado game especially that we still are an easy team to game plan against for bad teams. Colorado didn't have the players to execute it. They were playing a lot of young guys. But you knew, you could see what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. They were simply trying to pick off those mistakes that they knew were coming. Mm-hmm. And everybody's going to do that. And we have to get to the point, to your point, Bart, that that they have to come up with another plan. We're not there yet. And everybody is going to look for that bummer pass in the back, that Nancy goal that they can count on. Would I bet on us getting any clean sheets going forward? Not until I see it.
Oh, yeah.
Not until I see it.
And that's what I'm saying when I'm saying, like, we have to talk about it. Talk about the Cincy game, because everything in my mind in those 90-plus minutes is it checks every box in terms of what you want to see from the team in a positive sense, but also what you want to see the crew eliminate as time goes on. Yeah. And so how it influences and impacts every game for the, I would say probably the next maybe like 4 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks, that's going to be, because I think it's something they'll probably touch on in training. It's probably they as like a reference point for, it's like, here's why you should be confident, because we did this against Cincinnati. And that might even be a couple weeks ago, right? But at the same time, it's also like, well, we know this is a pretty good team, and we were able to do XYZ against a really good team. Can we also continue to do that and improve on some of the stuff that we've struggled with? That's where I think the next iteration or development that we want to see from this crew team.
Well, we had one of those nights on Saturday where the game was delayed by weather. And
which
then,
is my fault, by the way.
It's your fault.
I was in attendance for the second time.
Thanks for letting us know, bro.
I have been an absolute magnet for weather delays over the last 4 years, so that was my bad.
Well, it could have been worse.
Yes.
It wasn't much of a delay. But when the lineup came out, Mo Farsi was nowhere to be found. What do we know, if anything?
Yeah, nothing yet. I think they're doing media availability on Wednesday. We're recording this Monday night. I don't know if Nancy got asked about it after the game or not. I don't think it's too serious. I mean, were you in the
stadium? I hope not.
were either of you? I was not in the stadium when it happened. So I talked to somebody who said, like, he kind of limped, you know, pulled up, grabbing his calf.
Yeah, so I wasn't there either, but some asking around, was just a warm-up, felt the old air quote, felt something that we sometimes hear from good guys.
Nancy loves that expression.
And they
Aloy felt something in his knee, Cucho felt something in his knee, Viacia felt something in his thigh, I think.
So those are all quotes. I think it some rest will do him some good, because he has also played, I think, the most minutes of everybody on the team.
Yeah.
But it was about a late of a scratch as you could possibly get.
Yeah.
So much so that the TV broadcast literally didn't happen. All of a sudden,
that's weird, because I got a text about it.
When Max scored, it was like, wait a minute, that's not.
Oh, he doesn't look like a Muhammad Farsi.
That's not a hell of a goal from a left foot too. Is a fellow left footer.
Poor Harry probably didn't realize it wasn't Bo either until too late. But. I think Harry found out that Max Arfson was left-footed right in that moment, which was pretty great. But the, I did not sense or get a ton of concern about that from asking around, and I would expect him to be back in there relatively soon. The thing about that is I don't think they have to rush him back, which is nice, because Max played really well out there, and Luis Diaz got some minutes with Crew 2.
Not successful minutes, though.
Well, what are you asking Luis Diaz to do would be kind of a fascinating question. If you're asking Luis to be fast and run at the back line, which is what Mo Farsi's basically been doing all season long, that's what Luis loves to do. So,
but there's
you got some options.
Mo's
there.
Got another element to his game that's 100%. Not quite there for Lucha. I don't know. I'm very hopeful that, you know, this is a minor injury. I would be very concerned if Mo Farsi is going to miss a significant amount of time. I think he has been one of, and again, there have been so many, you know, Crew players and guys like Aiden Morris who've taken such huge strides this year. But raise your hand if you thought that Mo Farsi would be the team leader in minutes, you know, this far into the season.
Not in a billion years.
I mean, who has gotten us to the point where you're saying, oh, yeah, Steven Herrera, center back, why would you ever move him? Move him more into the center than that. because Mo has been so good. I think this is a guy that should be looked at least deserves to be looked at for the MLS All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
He has been that phenomenal. Yeah.
Voting is open.
Yeah, and I voted for Mo. So I think losing Mo would be a huge loss for this team, just when they just don't have, and I think Max played well, and we've seen other occasions where, you know, Alexander Matan has played well there on spot starts, but I think if you give teams a chance to game plan for a guy who's got less experience than Mo Farsi and none actually playing defensively, give a team a week to plan ahead for that. They're going to be going after him the same way that they were going after Phil Quinton. Granted, you know, that's, I'd rather you're going after an attacking on the outside than attacking right in the center. But I think it will ultimately, you know, come back on. It sounds like it's hopefully not going to be a problem that we have to deal with in the immediate future. But that was a big concern for me when we first saw him not in that lineup. And I think Max did have, though, a great game.
Hat tip for Justin Miram, who played his best game in Columbus since the 2020 MLS Cup final.
Yeah. I just love to see Justin. You know, if anybody deserved a ring, it was him. I mean, his second goal that final, he wasn't? He wasn't on that team? Oh, jeez.
This is a joke about the TV broadcast, which mentioned Justin Miram as winning an MLS Cup in 2020. We don't have to talk about the TV broadcast.
It was
not particularly good.
His reaction on not only the goal that was offside, and I believe he was offside, but the goal he actually scored was about as muted as we'll ever see.
Yeah.
And these days in sports,
well, the goal he actually scored, yeah, it should be muted. He was handed to him.
But. How many times do we see guys, former guys in any sport, come in and do something great and tell
Kai
the crowd to shut up and tell them to stick it where the sun don't shine, and he just turned around and ran back?
I talked to Justin before RSL played here, and I asked him for the story. I don't know if I put it in the story. I think I did, about, you know, if you score here, you're going to celebrate. And he said, I would never do that. Like, this will always be my second home. And, you know, he loves it here. I would be interested. Sam, did you end up catching up with him at all? Okay. I texted him, but I didn't hear back. I would be very interested to just hear his perspective on, because he did talk to me a little bit about, like, the league when he first got into it and what they had to deal with as young players, him and Eric Gehrig and those guys. Just, like, coming back and now playing twice in that brand-new stadium after spending time
right.
Obetz and historic Crew Stadium. Yeah, exactly. But no, he said he wouldn't celebrate, and he didn't for either of them. And, you know, credit to him.
And I thought he played well. Too,
he did.
He was
a factor. And they
he's
need
been good
factors.
For them recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it was a good trade.
Love seeing the homie play well. I thought it was interesting, like, not to turn this into a TV critique, but how confused the play-by-play guy was when the offside goal went in. He had no idea why Justin Miram was doing what he was doing or not doing what he was doing, which was fantastic from a soccer broadcaster. But I think You know, I was looking back at it was the backup striker conversation that kind of started this, but I went back and looked at like some former Crew players, and I don't know why this occurred to me or didn't occur to me, but Justin Meerum scored a shit ton of goals for the Columbus Crew. More than I kind of like
the
maybe
meat hook.
Yeah, maybe more than I realized. The meat hook, goodness gracious. So the fact that like he's still out there doing it is impressive in and of itself, but then to still kind of have the self-awareness to score kind of twice and still be classy and not celebrate, I thought was pretty spectacular and not surprising in any way, because I think he's that type of guy. But it was cool. I really, really respect the crap out of that guy.
I'll never forget the records goal in the playoffs against Red Bulls, scored 9 seconds into the game in what were frigid conditions at Historic Crew Stadium that night. He's an all-timer for me. What a class act. We were just reminded of that.
Real quick, I'm just looking at the draft. He was drafted in 2011. The vast majority of these guys are not even playing anymore, much less at the level that Justin is. One of them, Darlington Nagbe, obviously we know he's doing well. But, like, Perry Kitchen, we saw the end of his career. Mm-hmm. Jaleelani Baba, we saw the end of his career last year. Mm-hmm. Neither of those guys were anywhere near the level that Merrim's played recently, and they all went ahead of him. It's always fun to look back at some of these old drafts and see where...
Remember some guys.
Yeah.
It's always weird to remember...
Eddie Abi.
Because he also was the field goal kicker for the state up north. Yeah. And we forget that as well. I mean, what an interesting life. And to come where playing for the Iraqi national team as well after everything that country has gone through. It's really something else. He ought to write a book.
Cole Grossman was in that.
No, what a throwback.
All right.
Well, and also quick shout out to King Harrison, obviously.
Yeah, 100%.
There, best
dressed man in
MLS. After. Yep, and... The only royalty that we recognize here in the city of Columbus. That is our king, still.
Hector was in that draft?
You know, I think Harry, for some of the criticism that he got towards the end of his time here with the Crew, the move to left back, it really works for them. They were dangerous up that left side. And probably should have scored. Like, it takes a really great Schulte stop from keeping Harry out of the back of the net as well, which I kind of can't wrap my head around. Not one, but two former Crew players scoring against the Crew in one game would have been wild.
I wonder if that's happened before.
I doubt it. I really doubt it. Unless it's two goals by the same guy, but it's never been two from one. I think Harry has found another few years in Charlotte, and I don't know if I saw that coming. And then, you know, J9 continues to roll and score goals and be dangerous, and the effort and the physicality is still there, and I love it. I love to see it from both of those guys.
All right, your Crew moving on to Chicago on Saturday night for an 8:30 kickoff. Our former assistant Ezra Hendrickson was relieved of his duties about a month ago. And Frank Klopas, for our older listeners,
Mr. Chicago Fire,
the Billy Martin of Major League Soccer, is back for his third stint. Nobody's going to get that joke. Look it up. Is back in charge of Chicago Fire, the much beleaguered Chicago Fire. And this is where I want to bring in a quick discussion about designated players. Because if you compare DPs with their DPs, you can see exactly why the Chicago Fire team has struggled so mightily. They're getting nothing out of these three guys.
Yeah, I think part of that is the...
Real quick, just define designated player for people.
Yeah, that's what so, that was a poor setup on my part.
So designated player is one of the three spots open to teams to essentially be able to pay players, whatever salary they might want, and that number only counts X amount towards the salary cap.
Okay.
And
David Beckham.
Have to get these guys right, or you're just throwing money at them.
Right, what's fascinating about the development of designated player and how the the people that have been filling that role from starting with David Beckham to, you know, the era in which we are in now, it started with, you know, the aging veteran from a insert European league here. You know, the to like guys who are in their prime and who are were kind of not necessarily looking as MLS as like the old joke, like the retirement league, but as a legitimate option to both play at a high level and then maybe, you know, increase your stock elsewhere.
And credit to the owners who have gone out and done that.
Yes.
Yep. Like the Atlantas of the world. Instead of just getting the Beckhams or the Keens or, you know, guys like that, there was a shift where teams started to realize, look, we can use this money maybe a little bit smarter and resell a lot of these guys.
I don't think it's a coincidence, by the way. I would say that, to me, the guy that changed the whole designated player kind of thing is Sebastian Giovinco with Toronto, who came from Italy in the prime of his career, heavily criticized domestically for the move to go to Toronto, and comes and just lights it up, and probably should have been with the Italian national team while he was playing, was frozen out for it, and 100% unfairly. And I think that kind of signaled to the rest of the league that if you are willing to go and pay maybe just a little bit more, put an extra premium on that money, you can go out and get a sub 30-year-old guy who's going to be really good for you.
And thus, our DPs, Cucho, Lucas, and the veteran Darlington Nagbe, three winning DP decisions, no question. Now, Nagby's, as we've discussed, is probably at the end of that part of his career, but he certainly contributed at a high level. In Chicago, it's Shaqiri, Jimenez, and Torres. Torres is a really young guy, only 22 years old, but between the three of them, they have done absolutely nothing this year. Which is the one that's making the most money?
Shaqiri.
Shaqiri. Yep.
He's the most in the league, right? I believe.
I think he comes from where?
He's been all over. I think he ended his career with Stoke, right?
That sounds right.
A minute,
he's
but
been in the Premier
he
League.
Was in. He was in, and he played in with Bayern for quite some time.
So I believe he came from Liverpool, and left Liverpool. So Stoke City is probably where you, I think most
from
of us
from the Premier League.
Yes,
at least
most of us maybe remember him and getting on that left foot and scoring
bangers.
Came
from Lyon. Was there for one season.
Well, there you go.
After Liverpool, you're
so
right
the. That's where the, like, when I think of designated player, he's kind of the guy that I think of, type of player that, in my mind, like, is that era of guy is gone in MLS. I don't think paying Gaston Jimenez DP money to be a kind of a lazy D mid is crap, and that's just bad MLSing, bad GMing. Torres makes more sense to me, but that's a good example of a guy who doesn't really have a position. When you're good at a couple of them, but not great at any of them. Mm-hmm. But the Shaqiri signing it just didn't work for me with what Easy was trying to get that club to do, and what they were trying to do philosophically in attack. But it does speak a little bit to, I think, the intentions of this Chicago Fire, the new ownership group, that they're willing to kind of go for it. They're going to be willing to overpay guys. Now, it hasn't really worked yet, and they're not necessarily getting anything even close to their money's worth out of these three guys. But I think the intention is kind of an interesting kind of facet and nugget in the conversation. I think with Frankie being in charge of the group, you're going to see a really spun up, he's the motivator. He's the, kind of the soul, the backbone of a type kind of club. That's the type of coach that he is. I just wonder a little bit if you get guys to respond to that. Guys who have played in Champions League, guys who are maybe not thinking of MLS in the same way that they are looking at their previous playing years. But they have an issue with this year. It's a legitimate problem. The DPs are just bad, straight up.
Their leading
scorer, they're not the only one, by the way. They're not the only one.
That's what I was going to say real quick, is you look at, I brought up Atlanta, you brought up Toronto. when they've gotten those moves wrong, it's gone south really quick. Yeah. And, you know, credit to the crew, even, you know, previous regimes. You got it right with Scalotto. You won a cup. You got it right with Higuain. You never won the cup. You got to one. You've gotten it right now with these guys as you've been able to spend more money. But and there's been other guys, too. I'm picking the attacking guys there. But, you know, if you miss, it's like a quarterback in football. You get the quarterback wrong. Yep. You get these designated players wrong because you're paying them so much money. It can turn south quickly, even for proven franchises like Toronto, who was in, what, three straight MLS Cup finals, two straight, whatever it was, and Atlanta, who looked like they were going to be the most dominant team in MLS for a while. And anyway, we can go back to the Fire, but I just sort of went there.
But to kind of put a bow on and then move on to actually talking about the game itself, the thing about the current era of designated players that we're in right now is not something I would have imagined. Maybe 5 years ago, probably yes, 5 years ago, but 10 years ago, absolutely not. And that's wild to me. That's crazy to me. Like, because, you know, my MLS kind of fandom, my MLS contextual awareness is still Diamond Dog Night. You know what I mean?
Buck
it's,
Brotnet.
It's still Buck a Brotnet,
and
right?
Buck a beer.
Yeah.
Forget.
It's still like run up PKs, you know. It's Cheveria playing at a level I couldn't really imagine seeing it in person, being like, oh my god, this is incredible. And so I think it's just kind of a signal and a development of the league that like is like now MLS has the means in which you can go big and fail, and that's never really been a thing in MLS before. In the last, certainly in the preceding two decades, but in the last 3 to 5, you can go for it and fuck up, and it'll happen. But like that's kind of the nature that like that's like the great thing about sports, right? And that like the options are there for you to be able to do that, and. I think there aren't too many of the MLS neutrals out there. The Rob Lowe's wearing the NFL logo hat. You know, none of those people don't exist. But I think for those of us that love peeking around the league and kind of view the league from a bird's eye view, the fact that there are teams that have the ability to do that, there are a lot of teams that have the ability and the willingness to do that, is pretty great. Regardless of how that actually turns out, the fact that it even happens is pretty great.
And as much as I am, you know, as a rule against the idea of, you know, going and getting a big name designated player from Europe who's at the end of their career, Sergio Ramos, let's go, Tim. Let's go, D. Let's go, Jimmy. Let's make it happen. The ball-playing center back? Yeah, let's do it.
I'm not sure Sergio Ramos can run anymore. But
I don't need him to run.
I would not call him a ball player. unless the balls were, like, you know, aiming for someone's crotch with his studs, then, yes, maybe ball-playing center
back. I do think you were talking about the change in the league, and I think this also juxtaposes really nicely. We've got this nice, beautiful downtown stadium. It's the second stadium that the crew has played in.
Mm-hmm.
Third, second one they built, third they played in. Fire are back at Soldier Field, which is, I've never been, but by all accounts, especially after the renovations, very nice. After they built their own soccer-specific stadium, couldn't get anyone to go there because they built it out in the middle of nowhere, and are now back in a stadium which may be their own here very soon, but it's, you're back into the cavernous, you're talking about those Echeverry days, playing in the football stadiums. It's just an ass-backwards situation in Chicago. And we talked about how bad they were previously, but it's just the fact that they haven't been able to make this stick after they started so well in MLS for the first several years they were in is just it's incredible to me because you look at –
They'll always be Bridgeview.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's there's your problem. And,
right.
You know.
Well, their leading scorer right now is 38-year-old Kai Kamara. With 4 goals a year.
That's where Kai is now?
Yeah. They still have Shevchenko.
You can do it. You can do it. Do it. You can do it.
Shevchenko.
There it is. Shevchenko. Kasper Shevchenko, yes.
Thank you. Good Lord. I tell you what, it's like throwing spaghetti eyes against the wall. I get really
You get a consonant, and here's a Z thrown in. For
oh yeah, and with Jared and Shakiri,
Is he a happy guy right now? I mean, he's another important player for them, and
I think Shabilko, when Shabilko's like. When he's the focal point, the tip of the spear, like I think he's like a top 10 to 15 striker in MLS, but like no one can really seem to reach him from a motivation standpoint on a consistent basis. Kai is Kai, man. I mean,
I think he'll be okay.
The homeboy seems to be on a revenge tour everywhere he goes, which is wild because he's been everywhere.
Well, yeah, every game he plays is a revenge, match.
So, he to me is like the one of the great. If you were making like a top 10 list of like the craziest careers and personalities in Major League Soccer, Kai Kamara's on that list. I'm not sure if he's in the top five or back five, but I would probably put him in the top. This is a game, I think, for the Crew. Like, I want to see the Crew go out and pound the crap out of this team. Go out, dominate, win, like, 3-0 when it looks like you're just moonwalking in second gear the whole time. That's what this – because that's how bad the Chicago Fire team is. Anything less than that for me would be a little bit a smidgen of a disappointment, because I think that's what you have to do if you're a quote unquote elite team in Major League Soccer. That's what you got to go out and do against the Chicago Fire team.
Klopas 3.0, a victory, his first game back over front running St. Louis, the West top team, and then they've drawn three times and lost twice. Both the draws with Atlanta, New England, 3-3. Mm-hmm. So they've been scoring lately.
You're saying we should bet on goals in this one.
I would think that they would be good for one.
Yeah.
Of note as well, tomorrow, we're recording this on Monday night, they do have a U.S. Open Cup game against Houston. I don't know how seriously they take that. At this point, I suppose they ought to take it seriously. Yeah.
So, should have taken it seriously in the last round, too, but that's a different podcast.
Here we go. Chicago will have played a game this week, and we'll have a time to train and sharpen some things up as we go into Chicago. What's our history there? It seems like it's not very good.
It's not. It's better recently.
Well, the most recent one was fantastic.
Cucho.
Which was Cucho's introduction, and then Luis Diaz providing to Derek Etienne scoring twice, and the going down 2-0 at half, coming back and winning 3-2. This is kind of a good time. That's a really great road trip. But it's a little bit cumbersome for the club in and of itself. O'Hare does not allow any charters, or maybe Midway. One of them, I forget which one, doesn't allow any charters. So you got to fly in, and then it's like a 55-minute bus ride to the hotel, which is basically right across the street from Grant Park. You're like 5 minutes from Soldier Field. It can take you 30 minutes to get there. Because of traffic and all the craziness that you might have in the park on any given weekend. Fantastic hotel, one of the better hotels that they stay in the league. And then you get there and that field sucks. Yeah. It is hard for me to properly emphasize how bad that field was. Not last year, but the year before, they had Monday Night Football on it, or Sunday Night Football as a preseason football game. The night before, it was the worst field I'd ever seen. It was like playing, shout out to the Westerville co-ed soccer leagues back in the day, but it was like playing on those back in the day.
Was there goose shit on the field?
Yeah, we were goose shit short of it being a Westerville co-ed league. They were watering it at every opportunity they could possibly get, and that still didn't matter. I remember talking to Jossie Zardes after the game, and we were walking off the field, and I kind of like looked at him and I'm like, are you okay? Because he like looked at, like, in pain, and he just run for 90 plus minutes. And he kind of like put his arm around me, and he was like, no, like, I need your help right now. Mm-hmm. And, like, we, like, helped him back. That was how hard it was on his knees and his ankles. He was sore immediately following the end of that game. That's how hard the field is. That's how bad the grass is. It's rough. Now, I do hope it's better. We're earlier in the season, which I think it helps. But they really struggle with that. It's a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. The field sucks. You're looking up. If you feel like you're inside a skyscraper in that stadium. The crowd can be hit or miss. It's not easy. But all that being said, it's still Chicago, and Chicago rocks. Mm-hmm. The city's great amazing. Town. The players really love going for walks is a big thing. Like in the night before, and when you have one of the best parks in the entire world right across the street, players love that too.
Yeah. Do they go to the Big Bean?
Bean's a little bit far up from the hotel, so probably that's probably about a mile up the road.
Well, that's not bad.
3/4 of a mile up the road. We did this the other day, by the way. This will be a fun little thing. So the Bean, we're talking about the reflective art thing. What do you think the Bean is actually called in Chicago?
Oh.
Because it is not called the Bean.
What's it called?
Do we have any guesses around the table?
I know I've had this trivia question before, but...
Why isn't it just called the Bean?
You would think it would be called the
Billy
Bean,
Corgan's
right?
head.
It is actually called Billy Corgan's head. That's, it could be my head if it's Billy Corgan's head. It is actually called, and I'm showing my phone around the table at this point. It is called Cloudgate is the name.
Cloudgate.
Interesting.
Yes. So the last time I was there, one of the things that I would do before games, I would go for a run about 4 or 5 hours before I had to be there. And Chicago has one of the best runs in MLS because of the lake being right there. You can run along the lake. It's fantastic. And I ran from the hotel up past the fountain. If you've ever been to Grant Park, you know where the fountain is, to the Bean. I was like, you know what? I want to see the Bean. It's been a little while. So I get up there, and the first thing I see is a woman taking a selfie while she is kissing the Bean.
There you go. That's sanitary.
Now, I can't begin to describe to you how many hundreds of thousands of people come to the Bean every single day and touch that mother brother.
Yeah.
And this woman was getting all up in its business while taking a selfie. It was one of the more disgusting
things. So then Brett went and kissed it too.
Yeah.
I've witnessed
right in the
it
same
a long
spot.
Time.
And so this was early January 2020. And,
And so patient zero. But yeah, it's a great road trip if you've never been.
What's it called again?
It's Cloudgate.
Cloudgate sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like some Trump era controversy. Yes. Like, the clouds, folks.
If you have an opportunity, you should go.
Yeah, absolutely. Chicago's a great town. I love it. Not so much in January, but this time of year. Very nice, very nice. All right, let's make our picks and get out of here as we look ahead to Chicago at 8:30 on Saturday night. Sam, make a pick.
Let's go. 3-1 crew.
3-1 crew.
Hey, that's the name of that group there.
Yeah.
Hey,
Marv. Your friends and ours.
I will say, given the recent defensive frailties of both teams, we'll say 4-2 crew.
4-2.
It's probably a little optimistic for me, but.
Brett.
Okay, so I love the 3-1 picks, but in terms of making sure that all things, you know, are equal in this competition, that's not really competition. Give me 4-1 black and gold. I think they're more than capable of scoring four goals, especially because I expect Chicago to play a pretty good lineup in the Open Cup game at the midweek. 4-1 Columbus Crew.
I'm going to say
with
five,
Kai Kamara scoring the goal.
5-2. Was that your score?
We'll find out, won't we, Brian?
5-2 is mine, Bart.
Well, I first want to say, I don't know if Patrick mentioned this, but I am doing this podcast in protest. I do not think we should be recording this podcast. We did not do a podcast last week, and the Columbus Crew won both games after playing pretty poorly while we were doing the podcast regularly. So, you know what? If I'm right here, actually, not wrong, but if crew, you know, go on and they win this weekend, you know, you can record this or take the transcription and frame it and send it to me, as it'll be the first time I've ever had a wrong take ever on this podcast. So have that bit of history for you. That being said, I am going to pick Crew to win. And I was going to pick 4-2, and then Patrick said 4-2. And then I was going to pick 5-2, and then Brian said 5-2. So 5-1? We're going to go with 5-1. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Fair enough. I thought you should have gone 6-2.
That'll work. All right, and that'll do it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to our friends at Salsa Brewworks. Like and subscribe. Sam, thank you for making us sound so good. Turn up the bass. Turn up the bass. In post-production. Thanks to Murph. Thanks to Brett. Thanks to Bart. I'm Brian. Listen to my radio station, CD 92.9. I'd appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week on the Passport Podcast.